All right, welcome into episode 58 of the Natural Hat Trick Podcast, November 9th, 2016. Everything's still fine. Alongside Craig Morgan, no Jamie Eisner today, but he will be back next week. I'm Luke Lipinski. Craig, how you doing over there?
I'm great.
Okay.
Appointed a new supreme leader of the Banana Republic of the United States, and it's all good. It's all going to be fine.
Hey, all right.
It's all going to be fine.
So Craig's doing well.
Nothing to worry about.
No.
Nothing to see here.
You don't seem concerned.
Not at all.
At all.
I'm so good.
So where can we start here? Jacob Trouba is a proud member of the Winnipeg Jets, and a proud member, I think, is safe to say. You know what, Craig? I don't even know what to believe anymore. Did Jacob Trouba not a couple weeks ago, either he or his agent, essentially say that he wants out of Winnipeg? Now he gets a two-year, very cheap bridge deal, and he loves it there.
Yeah, exactly. And yes, we heard all of that. It's always difficult to know how much of that is posturing. And when you add the element of history with Kurt Overhart, his agent, and here in Arizona we know it well with the Kyle Turris saga, you wonder, okay, is this a little different than most posturing that we see? But in the end, they bring Trouba back on a very good deal. All indications are now that he wants to play here. The Jets aren't going to trade him. That's what other people around the league have been saying for a while. Other executives are saying, hey, I really don't think that they're going to move this guy. I just think this is all part of the process, and he's going to eventually re-sign. You know, the thing that's interesting to me, Luke, is there's this thread out there now that, it makes it so much easier to trade him now. I've talked to some executives who say, yeah, I actually think the opposite, and I don't think he's going anywhere.
Yeah.
I think he's playing in Winnipeg, and if he moves to the other side, you know, maybe something that they have to do. We'll see how that all shakes out. But this is a piece that they need, and at this price, why the heck would you move him now? I know you're going to have to be in this boat again in 2 years. You didn't get the long-term deal you wanted as the Jets, but why the heck would you move this piece right now? Why not just cross that bridge when you come to it?
Well, I think you're right, first of all, and he's saying the right things. I understand the narrative of if he really wanted out, the only real way for them to trade him and get decent value back is for them to go to him and say, sign a cheap deal with us, in theory, that makes it easier for us to move you, and then talk about how much you like it here so you don't kill all our leverage. Because we can't trade you if you're going to sit here and badmouth the organization. He didn't badmouth the organization, but he made it quite clear he didn't want to be there. So I understand that sort of
loose
logic.
Well, that's an awful lot of conspiracy you're spinning over there.
Well,
like a rigged election or something.
Well, I'm just throwing stuff out there and seeing if it sticks.
Okay.
And sometimes it does, apparently, in a big way. But with Trouba now, and he's signed, and it's for that amount of money per year, essentially $3 million per year, I would think Winnipeg's asking price, if anything, is going up now, because now it's a signed player for a cheap deal for the next 2 years.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And the price wasn't cheap to begin with.
If
there truly was a price now, if someone had come to them with a deal that just knocked their socks off, of course they would have listened to that. But I don't think there was anything really solid that Winnipeg was considering in terms of a trade in this deal.
No, I don't think so either. I think maybe they were just... And look, if they were willing to take just some sort of ridiculous offer, I'm sure they still are right now. I mean, how many players in this league are really untouchable if you come at them with... If Detroit really had said, like, yeah, we'll give you Dylan Larkin for Jacob Trouba, then I think Jacob Trouba would be on Detroit. But at the time, it just seemed like sort of a crazy asking price. And, you know, whatever it is, Winnipeg is better now because they have signed Jacob Trouba. There's no way around that.
No doubt. Absolutely. And they need him. They need him. They needed this piece. It was obvious early in the season that they needed this piece on their roster. So you play this out for a while. Hey, maybe we get down the road in the season and they think, okay, maybe we do want to move this piece after all. But I don't see it happening. I don't see it happening. And I also wonder now, because Jacob Trouba is in the fold, how much more attention gets redirected back onto Kevin Shattenkirk, who we know the Blues can't lose after the season for nothing. You can't let an asset like that walk away. Now, Doug Armstrong, their GM, has said, we might just let this play out. You know, we think we're contenders. We can go for it, win the cup. Okay, you win the cup. That's great. And if you get to that, okay, you know what? It was worth it then if you win a cup and you have to watch Kevin Shattenkirk walk away for nothing. But short of that, it's not going to look good for the Blues if they let him walk away with nothing.
Because
so
you take
you got to believe
hit.
A lot of teams are coming after him.
Oh, yeah. And now his – I mean, it's just supply and demand. I mean,
yes,
there's not
exactly.
a whole – there already wasn't a lot of defensemen out there in, that can play that role.
Right-handed top four defensemen.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. I mean, that's specific of a need that 90% of the teams in the league have. And by the way, Kevin Shattenkirk has been lighting it up this year if you've seen his numbers. So he's making himself only that much more valuable. For Winnipeg – Winnipeg right now is in the middle of the Central Division. I know we talked about this either last week or the week before. They couldn't afford, even though they had the leverage with him being a restricted free agent, they couldn't afford to play around for a whole season because in the Central Division, every game that you're not at your best makes it that much more likely you miss the playoffs. If you want to transition up front, though, it helps.
There's that segue again.
Seamless. It helps when you get to bump up from the sixth pick to... taking Patrick Laine, who's averaging just under a goal per game, and we're 14 games into the season. He leads the NHL in goals.
Luke Lapinski, man crush.
Go ahead. I know I talked about this on the show last week, how everybody is focused on McDavid and Matthews, and rightly so. I said this to you on the ride over. I think McDavid, I don't think he's Crosby. We can get into that in a moment, too. But I think he's the next generation's equivalent of Sidney Crosby. I think he's that good all around.
I think that's fair.
And I think Patrick Laine, and this is not because he had a hat trick last night or because he had a hat trick 2 weeks ago. This is what the scouts were saying, and this is how he looked in the World Juniors, and this is how he's looked now for Winnipeg in his first 14 career games. I think he has the potential to be the equivalent of this generation's Ovechkin. And it just gets lost in the shuffle that Winnipeg did not have the second worst record in the NHL last year, and they were essentially gifted Patrick Laine.
This is eating at you, isn't it?
I think if I was... if I was an angry Coyotes fan, this would bother me more than not getting Auston Matthews because...
Oh! Shots fired.
Well,
okay.
this is why.
Okay.
I'm not saying Laine is better than Matthews. I'm saying that Toronto had the worst record last year. The Coyotes did not. So, in theory, the team with the worst record is supposed to be the worst team. They're supposed to get the best player. So Toronto did that. But Winnipeg had the exact same record as the Coyotes, and they got Patrick Laine. And I know the Coyotes are happy with Clayton Keller, and I know they're happy with Jacob Chychrun. But they still would have had Jacob Chychrun, so that doesn't factor into this here. That was a later first-round pick. And Clayton Keller is playing at Boston University right now, which is fine. That's part of his development. That's what they expected. I think Patrick Laine, I already did believe the scouting reports. Now I believe them that much more. I think he is going to be routinely a 35 to 40 goal scorer in this league.
Well, that's the case. That's saying a lot. And if you're talking immediacy, he's contributing right now, so that would be nice to have on a team that it could certainly use a little bit more push. They're playing better hockey right now, obviously, but yeah, it would have been nice to have another piece that you could plug in to provide some more offense. And so far, so good. A long season to go here, rookie wall, all the stuff, all the usual qualifiers apply. But so far, pretty spectacular start.
Well, and I mean, I guess really the teams that should be the most upset were the teams like Vancouver last year that were.
Oh, they have so much to be upset. Oh no, that's the fan base. Sorry.
They always are upset. But that, I mean, that's the team that should have been picking there, essentially, right? Vancouver and Columbus, they were the two teams that should have been fighting for the right to draft Patrick Laine. And
instead, Vancouver is?
They're on a one-game winning streak right now.
That's true. They broke the streak. It's, you know, we should have done this a day earlier.
We thought about it. When we talked about it, they were on a nine-game losing streak. I tell you what, you know, I bring up the Coyotes because we're here in Arizona. Vancouver needed Patrick Laine more than anybody else in that draft. A goal-scoring winger. The Coyotes at least have a wave of young talent coming up. Vancouver doesn't really have it right now. That's the team that should be the most upset. And as I'm looking at the standings from last year, I guess he really should have to Edmonton, but I think they lost their right to that when they won nine drafts in a row.
Bet on getting the number one pick this year, though. Another Canadian team getting the number one pick.
Vancouver?
Yeah.
Okay, I thought you were talking about Edmonton.
Well,
that's going to get kind of tough.
That's always a possibility.
Yeah.
They always have extra. I won't say it.
So, conspiracy theory Craig.
No, there's no such thing.
No, I know.
It's not rigged.
No.
Nothing's rigged.
Well, so Vancouver, a team that we have talked about quite a bit on the show this season. I know that there are certainly people out there who believe that team is better than basically everybody projected them to be this year. They started with four straight wins. They've lost nine in a row. I think that lost nine in a row is before yesterday, right? I think that's the norm with this team.
I do too. I think we all said it at the start of the year when we were previewing this team that they're going to be a train wreck. They didn't know who they were. They don't have enough of anything to be competitive, even to be a playoff team, in my opinion. So what are you doing? There's the difficulty of managing the Sedin situation. How do you start a rebuild when you have twins who eat up a huge chunk of your cap and you have to move them together? It's a unique problem, the Canucks. But, you know, as we were talking about this, I think it was last week, actually.
Yeah.
Maybe that's something that they should have started a couple years ago, a few years ago, when they went out and got guys like Verbata and Ryan Miller. Maybe that's when they should have started the rebuild with those guys still in the fold, with the Sedin still there, and you could have injected more of that youth, and instead of these stopgaps every summer, adding a couple veterans who aren't going to get you to the level of being a playoff team. So what exactly are they accomplishing?
Yeah, and I know we've gone into this before, but it's when you're in a market like that and you have a hungry fan base, that team's never won the Stanley Cup. They were close a few years ago. They were about as close as you can get without winning it. It's tough to accept that you are one of the worst teams in the NHL. But that happens. I mean, that really, over time, that's going to happen to every team except Detroit. Like, you're gonna be near the bottom.
It's Jamie.
I'm surprised he didn't hear that somehow, even without a headset on. It's like the bat symbol. If you throw up something about Detroit making the playoffs for 26 consecutive years, Jamie just appears. I'm sure it is difficult, but I'm seeing headlines right now that Jim Benning isn't ready to trade away assets and start planning for the future.
And Willie Desjardins is safe still. Yeah. Which I don't get at all. I don't see much of anything coming from behind the bench up there. I really don't. I don't get it.
Doesn't have a ton to work with.
There's a player. Yeah. You look at some of the things that he's dealt with in the past. I know this is a just Coyote centric example, but look at their usage for Radim Verbata when he was there the second year. He's coming off a 31 goal season, and then you're playing him with guys that can't even win faceoffs to get you know. A guy that's winning like 37% of his faceoffs. So, okay, how's that going to go?
That one makes even less sense, because that's taking a stopgap and like throwing it at the wall or something. You're not using it to actually stop the flooding. So we don't need to keep talking about Vancouver other than to say we're going to probably be right on this one. And I could see us having the same conversation a year from now if they don't sort of awaken to it. And also, I do feel sort of bad for them that
it's a great hockey city.
It's a great hockey city. It's a beautiful city. Mm-hmm. And the one narrative that does follow them around, other than the trade your assets away while you still can, is you need to bottom out. They did bottom out last year, and they didn't get Laine, and they really should have. So
Try again.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess.
Keep trying.
I don't think there's a Laine in this year's draft.
No, that's the problem.
Flipping to Edmonton and Pittsburgh. So the team that's on the rise and the team that's the defending cup champs, we finally, for the first time, I believe ever, saw a McDavid-Crosby matchup, because they didn't play in the World Cup against each other, and Connor Sheary decided the game. So there you go. But
are you going somewhere with this?
Well, I don't know if I talked to you about this last week or not, but the narrative was out there from people that I respect within this industry that McDavid's already the best player in the NHL. And not that there's a debate that you can have that McDavid just is the best player. At what point do the ridiculous expectations for Connor McDavid have a negative effect on him, or do they? Because I am absolutely on board that 10 years from now, when we're doing this podcast, and we're doing episode 558, McDavid will be the best player in the NHL. And he will get there before that, I'm sure. But Sidney Crosby led the league in goals prior to last night, playing half as many games.
Right, he's on a tear since he came back. So
plays defense.
Yeah, he's a two-way player. Yeah, that's ridiculous, okay? It's ridiculous. Alex, just go ahead and say it.
Alex Ovechkin scores 50 goals a year.
Well, I mean, Connor, centers touch so many more parts of the game, so I could see that argument at least. And Alex Ovechkin has never been known as a great defensive player, although he's improved dramatically in that respect. But you just can't make that statement at this point. Connor McDavid, I have no doubt, will be that guy.
Yes.
And I don't think the pressure is going to matter for this guy. You know, maybe if he had to step into Austin Matthews' situation, going to Toronto in your first year and being the savior, which I don't, you know, I think that the pressure for Connor McDavid would have been even greater in Toronto than it was for Austin Matthews, because he's Canadian too, and he really is seen as the generational player of his time. So I don't know what would have happened. It might have been more difficult, but playing in the market that he is, and right now, the way he's playing, he doesn't seem like he's a flappable guy. He seems to embrace it. So I don't think that's going to impact his career at all. But he still has a little ways to go before he can say he's the best player in the game.
Well, and he doesn't. But it's just it says something about journalism. I know I'm going down a Craig Morgan path here. When the guy has played, 50 NHL games now, and it's not good enough to just enjoy the fact that he's got blazing speed and he's well on his way to being one of the best, I think probably of all time, assuming he plays out his whole career and everything. No, we have to just declare him the best right now.
Anoint him.
Yeah. And the timing is so weird, because if you were going to do that 2 years ago with Crosby and say, look, Crosby can't even get it done in the playoffs just that 1 year. He just won the Stanley Cup last year, and he looks better this year. And I don't even think it's just a Crosby-McDavid thing. I think Ovechkin needs to be in that conversation. And I think the simple fact that we haven't seen McDavid in a playoff situation against a great team that's focusing all their efforts on him.
Yeah, that's it. That's really it. It's the resume. It's not there yet. The body of evidence is not there yet. But again, I don't think it's going to impact him. This is just, you know, idle talk by journalists or fans. You know, it is what it is. It's just part of this industry that sort of stuff is going to be out there. I'm not sure it has much of an impact on the player himself, though. I think he will continue to develop. I don't think he's going to be impacted by any of this peripheral stuff.
Good. And you're right. He does seem to have that personality. You know, he faced Matthews last week, and his comment, I'm paraphrasing, was, I know it would be easier for you guys if I just came in here and told you I hate Auston Matthews, but I don't. He's a good kid. So, Connor McDavid is tough to not like, and there's no reason to not like him. I wish we could enjoy the ride with him instead of saying, well, you're 19, you're the best ever now, right? Like, do it.
I'm still thinking about that quote.
Okay.
Friendly rivals. Imagining the music.
Yes, something soothing.
People, let me tell you about my best friend.
Sung by Craig Morgan. You sing a lot on this podcast. You're aware of that,
probably,
right?
Probably too much.
Or not
once
enough.
Once is enough.
Well, we'll see. We talked a lot last year about how there were 7 Canadian teams that didn't make the playoffs. Are they all going to make it this year? What's going on?
It is crazy. Well, no, we just talked about
Vancouver,
the one that's not going
to. But, I mean, there could easily be 4 that make the playoffs. I think
Montreal's on a tear. Edmonton is vastly improved. We'll see how that plays out. I still don't know how that one's going to shake out in that division. That division is so weird right now. I don't think it's settled into what it's going to be yet.
It's definitely the weirdest division in hockey this year because there's so many different styles. There are teams in that division that look like they're playing a different sport from each other, and you can't say that about any other division, but I do think Edmonton's a playoff team at this point.
But what about those other teams? I mean, like Winnipeg, is that a playoff team? Is Calgary a playoff team? They're having a lot of problems. Is Toronto a playoff team? Probably not.
No. So I think Winnipeg or Calgary will make it. And I think Edmonton and Montreal, I think 3 will make it.
Okay.
I think Montreal is pretty much a lock, assuming Carey Price is healthy. That my opinion on them hasn't changed.
Who else you got in? Montreal?
I think Edmonton will get in.
What about Ottawa? Yay or nay?
Yeah. I don't.
How I feel about Ottawa right there.
Yeah. I don't know. If you could.
I don't know.
If we get like an artist rendition of that feeling, that could be their logo.
It's the facial expression which people are missing.
Yeah. But I think you can piece it together based on that. It's basically the same facial expression as that senator on the front of their alternate jersey from a couple years ago, remember?
We're straying too close to politics again.
Yeah, no, I'm sorry. You're right.
Let's move on.
Back to Canadian hockey teams. They're going to make the playoffs. I think Winnipeg is – I think I was probably – excuse me, a year off. I'm getting emotional about the Jets.
I thought it was the Canadian immigration site crashing that.
That did happen last night.
Yes.
Well, it's just a lot of hockey fans.
You got in too late?
Yeah. It was packed.
There are back rows, you know.
Any sport that loves hockey, I'm a big fan. But anyway, transitioning away from the Jets and looking at the situation that played out between 2 more Canadian teams this past week with Nazem Kadri and now becoming the most, public enemy number 1 in Toronto in Vancouver right now?
Yeah. I'll ask you first, what'd you think of the hit? I mean, both from a rule standpoint and from a logic standpoint. Maybe those go together for you. I don't know.
They don't necessarily in this case. I thought it was, I think by the very definition of the rule, this is great. I think I could say this statement in such a way where people in Toronto and Vancouver get mad at me. Let me see if I can pull this off. By the definition of the rule, I can see why he wasn't suspended. Common sense needs to come into play at some point, though, too, whether that means rewriting the rule or whatever. I understand why Canucks fans are upset about that. That was unnecessary.
I think you know where I stand on this. I want to err aggressively on the side of caution when it comes to headshots.
Aggressive caution.
And I know it's difficult. It's a fast game. guy lowers his head. There's all kinds of factors that play into this, but again, this is too important. It's too important to the long-term health of human beings. You need to go way overboard in protecting this part of the game, and that's where I stand. I know a lot of people won't agree with me. They'll call it the wussification of the sport, but yeah, that's their opinion. We know there are a lot of opinions in America that differ. So.
And you will call it aggressive cautiousness.
Yes.
Which would be a great name
aggressive
for a podcast.
Caution, yes.
makes for an odd road sign. I just, you know, it's one of those situations where I get the argument in the moment of, look, well, I don't think the principal point of contact was his head. He hits his shoulder before he just bashes his head.
Did they remove that
from
the rule, principal point? Did they remove that or tweak it because there was too much confusion?
Yeah. Okay, so, but yeah. However you want to word it, I mean, that was the debate that was going on when that hit happens, and I get that in the moment, and you're trying to fit it within the rules, and I get why, you have to adhere to the rules that are currently out there, but I think when you take a step back, you're like, yeah, but we don't want headshots in the game, and that's a headshot. I mean, maybe it's not a headshot as we've currently defined it, but if that's the case, then maybe we need to define it differently, and unfortunately for Sedin, he's just kind of the guy that takes the hit that maybe alters the rule for the better down the line. But, you know, I get why Canucks fans were very upset about that. They had every right to be, and yet he wasn't suspended, and yeah. I kind of understand that too based on the rule, which means something needs to change because that hit doesn't need to be in the game. Yeah.
And there's always going to be some subjectivity to it, right? No matter what you do, unless you just say, you know, any shot to the head is a penalty or even a suspension or something in between. But I'm almost at the point, and this is a gray area that in some maybe somewhat of a dangerous area to say this, but it's almost like I know a bad hit when I see it. I just know it, you know, and I can define it, and I saw it there. That was a bad hit, and I've seen so many in the past that haven't been punished that were so similar to one another. By the way, so I think sometimes they're splitting hairs. So let's just stop splitting hairs and let's protect guys.
Yeah, I look at the NFL. I'm a big fan of football, but the NFL has gotten to the point where nobody knows what a catch is anymore. The players, the coaches, the officials, the fans, the broadcasters. I don't want to get to that point with headshots in the NHL because as ridiculous as it seems, and you're watching an NFL game and you see a great catch and then it's ruled not a catch by some elaborate wording of the rule, that's not nearly as important as protecting not just your star players in this case. Daniel Sedin is still a star as far as I'm concerned in this league. He's certainly Vancouver's star, but just any of your players. You don't want to lose guys like that on the ice. So, no, I mean, they'll work on it. I'm sure the rage has subsided a little bit in Vancouver for now, but they play again December 3rd. So stay tuned for that one. The team Vancouver beat last night, Tuesday night. We're recording this on a Wednesday. The New York Rangers, I think, are a team that's worth us kind of getting into here, Craig. And I just realized we're not going to do a division this week, are we, in terms of what each team in the division needs to improve? We'll do that next week.
That sounds fine to me.
Okay, that's good.
We were supposed to do Swedish things today, too, and we're not going to have that, so we should let our listeners know that.
We'll push that back 1 week.
Yeah, we're still compiling clips. We're still compiling. What are we compiling?
I don't know. We got a good clip today, but I'm not going to give anything away.
Let's just leave that for the intro.
We are going to talk to Peter Axman of Barn Magazine later on at the show, the end of the podcast. He's going to give us some insight on a pretty interesting new publication he's trying to put together for hockey fans and artists and just a lot of different communities I think will be interested in this one. So stay tuned for an interview with him at the end of the show. But back to the Rangers. That's a team that we talked about in the offseason as not in the same situation as Vancouver in terms of not having talent. They obviously have a lot of talent. They make the playoffs every year. But how about trying to figure out where you're going with that talent? Are the Rangers a team that's just kind of leveled out in the playoffs, or what's the deal?
What's the deal with that team?
What's the deal with the Rangers? But they've figured out a way to sort of to get younger here. Maybe they're overachieving right now, but all of a sudden, JT Miller, Minka Zibanejad, Jimmy Vesey obviously helps. You've got a lot of younger, cheaper players up front that are leading that team in production.
Yeah, and you're rolling four lines that are pretty effective right now. Yeah. So everything looks good right now. They needed to get younger. They needed this infusion of youth, and right now it looks like, wow, they really nailed this. But again, words of caution. First of all, they played a ton of home games. I think they may have played more home games than anybody in the league. I'm probably speaking out of turn on that, but they they played an inordinate amount of their games at home, which is really helping because I think they've been basically a 500 team on the road. Is that correct?
Yeah, still? They're 8-2 at home, just 2-2 on the road. That is more home games than anybody
else. So that's a huge advantage
except
for them.
The Islanders.
That's a huge advantage for them right there. And then, I mean, you look at some of these young players, you wonder about, I think as of Sunday, I think they had the highest PDO in the NHL. So they're getting a lot of puck luck right now. And they're getting contributions from guys that, you know, the young guy, you mentioned Jimmy Vesey. Is he going to keep this up? Is he going to hit a rookie wall? Or are there going to be some lulls? I would expect that to happen for him. If it doesn't, wow, he's better than I think anybody expected.
Yeah.
And then a guy like Michael Grabner, is that going to keep up?
Yeah, it's not. It's,
I mean, he had a good season. God, was it 2010-11 was his last high-scoring season, but he has not been a terribly productive or healthy player for the last several years, and this sort of feels like an anomaly to me, too. Now, maybe because they're rolling four lines, other guys will pick up the slack, and they'll find a way, and we'll all say, wow, what a job the Rangers did of retooling this thing on the fly. But, again, words of caution. Let's tap the brakes, given the things that we're seeing right now. Tap the brakes a little bit on that start right now.
His career high in points is 52 back in the 2010-11 season. He also had 34 goals that year, which I think is probably the bigger deal of those two stats. Right now he's on pace for pretty close to 70 points and right around about 38, 39 goals. So I think when you look at the Rangers...
Were he at 9 last season?
Yes. Okay. And 9 assists, though. Don't forget that. So okay. 18 points.
Okay. In 80 games, right?
Yep.
Okay.
It's kind of alarming to me that you have Michael Grabner's stats memorized, and it makes me want to ask questions, but I'm not sure I want to know the answer, so I'm not going to. The bigger picture with the Rangers, I think, is what they have going for them is it's, yes, VC has 6 goals, and Kevin Hayes has 6 goals, 7 assists, and JT Miller's off to a great start, and Chris Kreider, and Zibanejad, and Grabner. Some of them are going to drop off. Are they all going to drop off, though? I mean, that's the thing. So I think they're going to still be a pretty good
team. Depth of scoring, yeah, they could be. They could be. And again, they have to go out on the road here, too. And they're going to hit a lengthy road trip where they have to prove it as well. But
and the flip side would be Derek Stepan has 1 goal, and they're still winning
all
these
games. So he's got to pick it up. See, that's the other side of the coin.
Right? It all
evens
out.
Yeah, he's got to pick it up at some point. So
yeah, well, if you're a team in the Metropolitan Division and you're not the Capitals, the Penguins, or the Rangers, are you just playing for the wild card already?
Absolutely.
I mean, I know that's sort of simplistic and maybe it sounds like an over-exaggeration or jumping the gun, but yeah, right?
That's my answer, yes.
New Jersey's having nothing more to add. Year, but yeah,
it's obvious. Yeah, those three teams are so far ahead of the rest of the division, it's just silly.
I don't know what else you can do. But, I mean, you can still get in the wild card. And
then play one of those three teams or, you know, if you beat one, play two of them.
Well, maybe. Maybe you're that wild card that gets Montreal in the first round and you can
Tampa
get...
Yeah. See how that one shakes out.
Tough spot if you're not the Penguins, Rangers, or Capitals in that division. Montreal, are we going to go down this path? Wait, let me see how I can make the seamless segue. Also in that division, the Columbus Blue Jackets, who are doing much better than they did a year ago, partially because of a 10-0 win over the Canadiens and Al Montoya last week.
Yeah, Montreal's goals against jumped almost a full goal after that game, by the way. They were still league best after it, but it went from like 1.3 to almost 2.1. In one game because they gave up 10 goals. And Al Montoya actually gave up all 10 of those goals for some unknown reason.
That was strange because Carey Price sure didn't look hurt to me, and he's played since then. So
well, the narrative was they wanted to give him a day off. Okay, I get that. It's important. But, you know, I talked to Corey Hirsch about this, a guy that lives locally here but does analysis for several networks.
He had some good tweets. He's had some good tweets on a variety of topics in the last week.
He tamed it down a little bit. For me, for the actual quotes in the story,
yeah,
we removed the obscenities. But seriously, it's early in the season. It's not like you're battling, as he said, you're not clawing for your playoff life.
Yeah.
Okay? Yes, it's
that
great.
Was your first
the
regulation
initial
loss.
Idea is to give Carey Price a day off. But then when Al Montoya gives up goal number 7, you might revise that plan so that you're not just burying your backup goalie. And essentially, as Corey said, saying, we don't care at all about you. It's all about Carey Price. We really don't care at all what happens to you.
Yeah. And here's the thing. Carey Price missed the first few games this season because he was sick. He was working his way back from injury. Al Montoya didn't miss a beat in those first few games of the season. Then Carey Price came back, game 4. Al Montoya stepped in against the Islanders. Yeah. And
here's your 10-goal reward.
Basically, yeah. I mean, that game was so strange because at the time, the Canadiens were 9-0-1. They didn't have a regulation loss. They had given up 14 total goals in those those 10 games. One of them wasn't even a goal. It was a 3-2 shootout win, so you get credited with a team goal, essentially, for winning the shootout. They gave up 10 in one game. Against Columbus, by the way.
Yes, that's a really good variable there.
Let's not leave that part out.
Yes, exactly. You have to include that it was Columbus. Okay, so it's like insult to injury. I'm a journalist. At least I like to think of myself as a journalist. Maybe some of you do not.
You do wear those shirts that just say journalist across the front.
Yes, not the ones that were on the Trump campaign rope.
You didn't. I don't think I'm ever going to see you wearing one of those.
I hope I never see one. I'll be running, but. After that game, were you satisfied with the line of questioning from the local media? Michelle Therrien basically said, "Yeah, it was a tough decision. It was a tough decision leaving him in there. Tough? What do you think it looked like from Al Montoya's perspective? I think he would have used other words if he were speaking freely.
Yeah.
I think he would have used other words than tough."
That was so strange.
I mean, I probably would have asked seven straight questions about that.
You would have.
Wait, define tough. What do you mean tough for you? Tough for the goalie? How do you think the goalie felt in that situation? Don't you think as a coach, call me crazy, but I've heard a lot of coaches say that two of their greatest responsibilities are to put players in a position to succeed.
Yeah.
And to earn the trust of their players.
Yeah.
Do you think Michelle Therrien accomplished either one of those goals? In that game.
How am I funny? Am I like a clown? Do I make you laugh? Because that's what
Do I amuse you?
That's what your original line of questioning sounded like. I don't think he was pressed on that enough, which is kind of surprising considering the market that he's in. And again, Montreal is in a very good spot. What could derail this Montreal team? A Carey Price injury. How do we know that? Because it just happened last year.
Right.
So is the hope then... Nothing against Mike Condon, but he wasn't nearly as battle-tested as Al Montoya is. But Al Montoya has been in this league for years and years. Maybe if something happens to Carey Price, and it's not for the whole year, but maybe he misses 3 weeks, Al Montoya can step in, get us through those 3 weeks, get us some wins, and we'll be fine. Or we could just obliterate his confidence for no real reason and open...
In one night.
In one night, and open a very slim door.
Against the Columbus Blue Jackets.
It sounds like an intro to a movie trailer. Montreal had given up 14 goals all year. They gave up 10 in one game. I don't know how else to put it. Sergei Bobrovsky stopped 30 shots in that game, got a shutout. Al Montoya stopped 30 shots in that game and permanently destroyed his goals against average for his career.
Yeah, you're right. He'll be digging out of that the entire season now. Especially like as a backup, seasons. Right? Because he's just not going to get enough time.
His numbers were fantastic.
Yeah, what are his numbers now? I wish I knew what they were before and after. I didn't look at that, but he played well. He carried them early in the season.
You didn't know to look at Al Montoya's numbers just randomly before that game, just in case?
No, I don't have those memorized. I'm ashamed of myself.
Well, this is how good he was before that. His goals against average right now is still just 3.15, which is like better than Peter Mrazek. So, I mean, that's something that he can hang his hat on. It was weird. It was strange. The Canadiens are winning again since then. I do think there is something to the fact that when you have these sort of long-term aspirations that the Canadiens have this season, let's make sure everybody feels right about things. Let's not open any little potential door that maybe could come back to bite us down the line. I don't think Al Montoya is going to go out there and purposely play bad. He's a pretty mentally strong goalie, so I think he'll be fine. But why put him in a position where the next time he gives up a goal or two, he's like, I kind of feel like an outsider on this team anyway, and I've got to prove everything every time I try and make a stop.
That's the thing. I don't know if there are going to be any long-term ramifications of this at all. There may not be, but you just don't do that as a coach, ever.
No.
Just black and white. You just don't do that to a guy.
The argument, I guess, is that they played again the next night and they wanted Carey Price
healthy. That's what I'm
healthy,
saying.
But
so what?
Yeah.
So what? Again, we're in November.
Yeah, that's true. And you hadn't lost a game of regulation yet, so you could afford one and then maybe I don't know. You got to look big picture. We'll see. Yeah. You think Montreal hangs around, though, this year? They're way in first in that division ahead of both Tampa and Detroit.
This hot start in the Eastern Conference is really going to help in that regard. I mean, you get off to this kind of start. It's really although we saw them do it, right? We saw them collapse after a great start before.
We did, but they lost their best player.
Yeah, they lost Carey Price. If he stays healthy, this is probably going to be enough to push them in wherever they finish in that division.
Before we get to this interview, I'm going to throw a couple teams at you, and just you can word association, you can just riff, you can say whatever you want. Okay.
Oh God.
I'm just going to go through a couple of the division leaders and the bottom feeders right now. Montreal, we already touched on. The Rangers, we already touched on. Pittsburgh is another division leader. They look pretty good right now. Pretty happy with the way they're rolling at this
point. Yeah, I mean, everybody back, right? Essentially everybody back. Yeah. So, they haven't missed a beat from last year.
They keep falling.
Do I only get one word on this?
No, you can say as much as you want.
Okay. I'm just making sure of the rules.
No.
Just checking here.
We touched on Edmonton and then the other division leader, and I know you're going to have more than one word on them. Chicago Blackhawks seem to be doing okay despite having a weak power play to start the season.
Oh, PK is on fire now.
Weak penalty kill.
PK is on fire now. Here's the thing that is impressing me the most about the Blackhawks. There are a lot of things that are going pretty well for them. Corey Crawford's been fantastic, first of all. Can we say that? 5-on-5. He's been so money. And early in games, when they've just been under siege in the first period because they never seem to come out to play, he keeps them in games. He's been spectacular. So that's one thing to look at with the Blackhawks. Their PK is getting back to where it should be. You know, we knew it was going to be historically bad like that all season, and they've been playing much better on the penalty kill. We'll see where the young players go, but that second line right now, they've been able to move Patrick Kane up with Jonathan Toews, as they call it in Chicago, the nuclear option. Marian Hossa has jumped back into that second line. He's scoring like crazy. He looks terrific again playing with Artem Anisimov and Artemi Panarin, and suddenly that second line is, we're just fine. We're good. We moved Patrick Kane off it, and it's still an incredibly productive line with Artem Anisimov at the top of the NHL points.
Don't they have to get another guy named Artem or Artemi? Or
I still think they need a left wing on Toews and Kane's line. But if those two are playing together, maybe not.
Maybe it'll be enough.
You just stand in front, okay? We'll bank a few off.
You skate and just pick up some loose pucks. Just be where you're supposed to be.
You'll score.
Just get out of the way, basically.
Panic.
Yes. He had a hat trick already this year.
No. It's crazy. I don't think it matters who plays on that line.
It sure doesn't seem to. Let me throw this last team at you because they were not in town last night, but they played the Coyotes last night, and they were a team that started off very well and actually right now have the worst record in hockey, technically, the Colorado Avalanche. That is a team that is really difficult to wrap your head around because some nights they have that speed and they look like they have it all together and looks like, I understand why this team won the Central Division a couple years ago and came from out of nowhere because Nathan MacKinnon, remember, was a number one overall pick and he was great in the World Cup of Hockey this September. He just picked up a second goal last night and they are losing a lot of hockey games right now.
Yeah, they are. And, I think part of what we're seeing is a transition with a new coach and they're trying to play a little bit different style of hockey than they did under Patrick Roy. So maybe that's part of it, but they're just not a great possession team, right? No. That's a problem. And there's a lot of skill there. So in some ways, it's troubling. It's perplexing. You can't figure it out. I still don't think their blue line's very good, and that's a big part of it. You know, they've got some pieces back there, but I don't think they have enough. But, I don't think they should be this bad. So maybe we're seeing some transition, or maybe Patrick Roy wasn't the problem after all.
What's going on here? They started the year 3-1 with wins over Dallas, Pittsburgh, and Tampa. The one loss was to Washington.
Dallas is struggling.
They are. Since then, Colorado...
Of course, they have half their lineup out, but...
That's true. What's left of Dallas is struggling. Right. Since then, Colorado's 2-6. They've scored more than 2 goals in a game once, and it was 3.
See, that's crazy to me.
That's the part that doesn't add
that's
up.
Crazy. It hasn't been last, right? It's got to be an anomaly.
Well,
I should start losing 5-4 again anytime soon.
It was... raise your game. Lose by higher scores. It just kind of gets to the last point I was going to make to you. You look at the teams that are trailing all their divisions right now, Buffalo, Carolina, Colorado, and Arizona technically is in the Pacific right now, although we think that'll be Vancouver, and Vancouver's 1 point ahead, and they've played 2 more games, so take it with a grain of salt. Vancouver's 1 point ahead. Calgary's also 1 point ahead, and they've played 2 more games. Of all those teams at the bottom of their divisions, I'm kind of most worried for Colorado because of the division they're in. I think they'll play better, but I don't know if that's going to translate into a whole lot of points in the standings because the only teams in the Central that are near them right now are Dallas and Nashville, and I have to think those two teams are going to get something corrected here at some point.
And that's the thing. I agree with you that, if you fall behind in that division with how top-heavy it should be, you're in trouble. You were talking about Winnipeg earlier, and how they need to get Trouba into the mix because you can't fall behind in that division. It is interesting that two of the four teams in that division that people expected to be right at the top are really struggling. Now, Dallas has had significant injuries, so that's really factoring into it. But again, there's still questions about their goaltending and that blue line that will persist until they put together a run with their healthy lineup. Nashville?
Nashville's got their players.
Yeah, what's going on there?
That's
it's all PK. He's the problem.
Yeah, he's the problem.
They're vindicated.
I can tell you, I did write something about them late last week on today's Slapshot. And if you look at their top line, and I know you and I were looking at their top line when they were in town last week as sort of a, hey, here's three guys that David Poile stole from Eastern Conference teams. Loaded talent with Ryan Johansson and Philip Forsberg and James Neal. James Neal has picked it up a little bit lately, but By late last week, that trio had combined for 2 goals.
Yeah, that's insane.
That line needs to score.
Absolutely. They have to be the offense.
And right now, James Neal has 3 goals, but Johansson and Forsberg have combined for 1 goal. That won't work.
Yeah. You wonder, you know, if you're facing too much focus from opponents, do they think about splitting those guys up at some point?
Maybe.
To try and balance it out? Because even just to get them going, maybe you need to inject something else to get those guys going, because you got to have those guys at the top of your score sheet.
But, I mean, in that division, again, I know we keep saying this, but in the Central Division, it's, okay, yeah, figure it out now, because you don't have a couple weeks to figure
Chicago
it out.
Chicago and St. Louis are both, I mean, St. Louis went through a little lull, but they're right up there again. I think the Blackhawks have won 6 straight going into a game with the Blues tonight.
Yeah.
To be honest, the Blackhawks have not even played that well yet.
They haven't.
If they put something together here, I mean, one or two of these teams could just run away and hide with this division.
If you're Dallas and or Nashville, you need to be hoping that both wild cards come out of the Central at this point.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, anytime you're looking at a deficit, now it's really early, so I wouldn't say this quite yet, but anytime you're looking at a deficit of like 10 points in the standings, that's really significant in a good division where teams are going to win more than they're going to lose.
Yeah. I mean, Dallas and Nashville both 8 points behind Chicago for first. Now, if your bigger picture is let's just get in the playoffs and do some damage when we get there, that's fine. Chicago has 19, St. Louis has 16, Minnesota and Winnipeg both have 13. But the team that would concern me most if I'm Nashville or Dallas is Winnipeg, because that wasn't necessarily supposed to be a playoff team this year. And if Winnipeg gets in, I'm pretty confident Chicago, St. Louis, and Minnesota all make the playoffs this year.
You like the Wild, okay.
I like them to get in the playoffs because that's what Bruce Boudreau does.
Sure.
I mean, I would be the least confident of them, of those three, obviously. But let's just assume those three hold up. If Winnipeg gets in, at least Nashville or Dallas doesn't. This is simple math. And that would have been crazy to say before the start of the year. And it is very early, and that's fine. And I understand Dallas doesn't have their players, but they are still picking up these losses that their players are going to have to be saddled with when they come back. So we'll see. Anything else before we get to Peter here? Talk a little Barn Magazine? No?
You mean like what happened? No, never
mind. No,
I can't go there.
Just specifically. Craig, there's
just
a lot of...
I'll just cry softly.
There's a lot of subtext with Craig today, but Craig's here. He's a trooper to bring you episode 58. And now we are going to talk to Peter Axman to get his thoughts on a project he's starting up for the hockey fans out there, called Barn Magazine. All right, we're joined now by Peter Axman of Barn Magazine, who's, Peter, I guess I'll just let you explain this. This is kind of, it's exciting because there's not a whole lot of hockey publications really out there that are starting up that are new. It's mainly the traditional stuff. So can you kind of give us some insight on your publication?
Yeah, of course. Thanks for having me, first of all. So Barn Magazine is a quarterly print magazine that features smart, thoughtful, innovative writing with creative, bold, modern design. And, we're really different from everything that exists in a couple ways. First, we're an oversized print magazine, and, there's not that many out there. You have the hockey news, and then Sports Illustrated gets into hockey once every season, maybe. But we're, totally dedicated to the game, and we cover everything from beer league, pond hockey, to NHL, KHL. Anywhere if there's a good story with good characters or anything like that, we'll cover it. The other aspect of it is that we're a really visual magazine. I'm sure you saw the images on our Kickstarter page. We're really heavy into illustration and design. In a way that a lot of places aren't. Again, I go back to the hockey news. I don't mean to hate on them. I like them. But they're, a very traditional magazine, and we're much more visual, both in terms of the photography and the illustration. So, I think we offer something that's totally different and appeals to a younger generation of fans that appreciates good writing than a visual print product.
Peter, can you give us an example maybe of something you're featuring in an upcoming issue and what form that takes?
Yeah, sure. So our cover story is about Alex Ovechkin, And I think it's a perfect Barnes story for a couple of reasons. First, the writer who wrote it is Eric McElrain, formerly of Off Wing Opinion. And he's covered Ovechkin from, he's covered the Caps since before Ovechkin. And so he's seen his whole career. So he does a really good job of putting perspective on Ovechkin's career and showing where he's been, where he's going, and how we should really consider what we have in the league in terms of having Ovechkin being great all these years. And the other reason I think it's really great is that Ovechkin is one of the few real characters in the game. People love him or hate him, but he's got a personality, and he brings fun to the game in a way that a lot of players don't. So that's something that we really want to celebrate. You know, so many other sports have done an amazing job at creating the hero and villain narrative and developing the characters in the game, whereas in hockey, there's just, you know, for years, it's just been a lot of, players that are kind of bland, kind of boring. And I think something that will help get more people excited about the game is if they can understand who these players are and be able to grasp onto them in a way that's different than just knowing their Corsi or their Fenwick.
Peter, give me the history on this. What sparked your interest in doing something like this, and what's your history with the game?
So my history with the game is that I was extremely average, some might say below average, stay-at-home defenseman growing up in Boston. So I played all through my youth in high school. And then I've now lived in enemy territory in New York for about a decade, and I fell off the game for about 4 or 5 years around the first lockout, or I guess the one in the 2000s. And then about 6 or 7 years ago, I started to play again. I play in pickup ice games in New York, as well as a regular ball hockey game, and occasionally a pickup roller hockey game. And then it reignited my love of the game. And so I merged that with my love of writing, design, and illustration. So there was a hole in the market of the type of coverage for hockey. So I've worked professionally in communications and media for about 10 years. And I don't know how much you guys have seen, but in the past couple of years, there's been this resurgence of niche print magazines. And that kind of validated this concept that I've wanted to do for 5, 6, 7 years. And so about 2 years ago, I really started pulling this thing together. And the Kickstarter campaign is definitely the biggest step we've taken to getting out there, because we're actually public now. And it's more than just friends and families and people working on it that know about it. There's actually, you know, hockey fans around the two countries and around the world, actually. I've heard from people from different countries that have been interested in it. So that's kind of the background of it. And this is, you know, Kickstarter is just exactly that. It's a kickstart to get this thing going. We plan to publish 4 times a year, and we hope that people really like it.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned trying to kind of find that niche market. How difficult was that for you? Because, I mean, certainly when you're trying to create anything new now, I mean, there's so many different ways for just the average person to create a product and maybe do it for a couple months and then give up on it or whatever, but it almost floods the market. How difficult was that for you to step in and find something that would be unique and catch people's attention?
I think there's so many great sites, blogs, podcasts that cover the game, but, you know, there wasn't anything that's really print-focused. And you know, we're a niche product, and I say that meaning we're not trying to scale to 1 million readers. So, you know, print product can survive in that type of environment if you're not trying to, you know, be Sports Illustrated. And so the best part about this has been finding people who have validated the concept and have been interested in it. And we've done that kind of two ways. I've worked with people that are hockey writers that I think do a really great job. But I've also worked with one of my favorite stories in the magazine is from an energy reporter who's a massive Sharks fan. And he just brought a totally different perspective. So it's been a process of finding those people who have, whether they like had a tweet storm during their game, and I just happened to retweet and went down a rabbit hole, or finding them in different ways. That's been actually one of the most enjoyable parts of it. And the other part of that is that, you know, I thought that there would be people that are artistically focused that love hockey, but I wasn't really sure just how many there were. Our cover artist, his name is Kyle Secker, and he doesn't work in hockey, but he loves it. And he had a throwaway line in a bio of a piece that he had somewhere that said he loved hockey. So I reached out to him, and his enthusiasm for the game and the project was amazing. But like I said, he hadn't ever drawn hockey. So it's been fun finding a combination of those types of people.
So I have to ask, is this a full-time gig for you now, you know, living in the incredibly inexpensive city of New York?
No, it's not. It's something that I've been doing on the side. But I guess I would say it's my full-time gig. You know, launching something like this, it definitely takes a lot of time and a lot of effort and energy. And you know, as I've gotten more into it, I'm realizing how much more it takes. So it's been a lot of late nights and early mornings and ducking out to do stuff on a lunch break or whatever. You know, who knows what will happen down the line. I mean, this is something that I would love to be doing full time, and got a ways to go to get there. So I don't know. We'll see. But for now, it's definitely my second full time job.
So which borough are you living in right now?
Brooklyn.
Okay, so not quite as bad when you're walking around with your Bruins jersey on as it would be, you know, if you're somewhere in the vicinity of MSG.
Yeah, people are pretty apathetic. I'm actually standing two blocks from MSG right now. I don't think people know what the Islanders are in Brooklyn. And my line about living in enemy territory, it doesn't apply as much. When I talk to hockey people, they're like, oh, you're in Montreal? Oh, no. I'm in New York, which is a little bit less enemy territory than it is for all of our other sports.
Well, what's the feeling around Brooklyn just in terms of playing in Barclays now, and how that was supposed to be such a great thing, and now just a year later it almost feels like it's a burden for that team? Is that something that's talked about there, or are people just kind of accepting it at this point?
Well, that question supposes that there is a feeling at all about the Islanders. I'm in two different worlds. Obviously, I'm like very immersed in, I follow the Islanders writers and the people who care about it. But in my day-to-day life, I don't think people that are not in the world that you guys and I am in really realize that the Islanders here. It's a funny thing. When they came here, there wasn't any advertisements, or there's extremely minimal advertisements around the city. And I was here when the Nets moved in. I actually used to live two blocks away from Barclays, and I saw them build it throughout the years. So I was there when the Nets came in, and they were just everywhere, and like the campaign for them was off the charts. But there was just none of that for the Islanders. And you know, I'd heard from some people that they were taking a let's wait and see what we have in our hands, and then we'll figure out what we want to do in the next couple of years. But I got to say, in year two, it hasn't been all that different. And to be fair, the new owners are coming in, so their first year fully transitioned in. So there's still, you know, there's time, there's room, but I don't know. This is actually one of my favorite stories I've been following, because it's just such a mess, which is like physically with the ice versus
the pickup truck.
I played in high school hockey rinks that look more professional than that.
We were just on a road trip there with the Coyotes, and it was amazing. You know, because that arena is relatively new in terms of NHL arenas, when we took the bus elevator down to the spinning platform because no one thought to put an actual ramp into the arena for the bus. It was amazing how old that arena felt. It felt like it was 100 years old, and it's one of the new arenas in the NHL.
I've never been below concrete level, so I haven't seen that stuff. But I forgot about that spinning bus. That's amazing. That's either total incompetence or engineering ingenuity?
I'm split on that as well. You know, the most amazing thing about that elevator was the speed at which it moved. You could literally count the cracks as you were moving past them. It was descending so slow.
Wow.
What do you guys think? So you guys are of the outside perspective since you're not here. What's going on with them? Where do they end up? Do they go back to NASA? I don't know.
I think a lot of stuff is on the table. I think that's still up in the air. But, yeah, I don't think that is – I don't think that's a viable solution long term.
Yeah. We just had a reading series on Monday night in the city with a couple of our writers, and one of our writers, Patrick Kearns. He's super passionate about this. And he thinks that they're going to end up at Belmont out by the raceway. It's kind of – I don't know how well you guys know the city, but it's kind of on the border of Long Island and Queens, where it could technically still be in the city, but definitely drop from the Long Island side, which is an interesting and feasible solution. But then you just do the whole, we're moving to Brooklyn thing, and then we're kind of not.
Just 2 years later or whatever. Yeah. Okay. Peter, why don't you give us and the listeners some insight just in terms of how to either help out with the project or how to find out more about the project. I'm on the website right now, but maybe you could pass it on to everybody that's listening.
Yeah, that'd be great. So people can go to bit.ly/barnmag, the capital B and a capital M, or it's probably easier just to go to barnmagazine.com and they can click off there. We're looking to raise $50,000, which will help us wrap up issue one, and then set us up to continue with our first run, the first volume, I guess. We're speaking on Wednesday, and we have a week and a half left. So if people hear this, will be a few days later. But we definitely need some help getting there. The response has been pretty incredible. I mentioned earlier, I've heard from people, frankly, all over the world who have come out and have wanted to contribute or support or have done whatever they could to spread the word. So it's been really rewarding to see the concept validated, but we definitely need to build community and get some more backers. We did publish our cover story on thehockeywriters.com. That's also linked to on our campaign page, so people can read that so they can get a sense of the type of stuff that we're doing and know that there's an actual product behind it. And the last thing I'll say is, you know, we're about 85% in terms of having the first issue wrapped. So we're looking to ship at the end of January. We're just spending the next couple of months finishing it up. And hopefully people will have something on their doorstep around All-Star game time.
All right, Peter. Well, listen, best of luck in this venture. Nice to have another voice in the game.
Thanks very much, guys.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks a lot, Peter. Good luck with all this. Love to hear the passionate journalism at the most basic level. I mean, is that not it right there, Craig? He's got a full-time job, but in his spare time, he's running out and trying to start this entire different product. And I'll tell you what, one thing he said that really stands out to me that I think we've even talked about on the show before. I know I've ranted and raved on this. Hockey's got personalities in their players that they don't market necessarily as well as I think they could. Alex Ovechkin is a great player, and so people kind of touch on, oh yeah, he's a little bit different. But but there are a lot of personalities within the sport that you and I and people that follow it closely or work around it closely know about. But just your typical sports fan flipping through the channels on a Tuesday evening and he sees the Islanders and the Bruins on TV, but he doesn't know anything about any of the players. He's just going to go on to an NBA game, which nothing against the NBA. I think the NBA markets their product wonderfully, but a regular season NBA game to me is not nearly as entertaining as a regular season hockey game, but they know who the players are in the NBA. They don't necessarily know who each NHL player is.
Yeah. And the NHL of course is fighting a little bit with the simple fact that NBA players don't wear helmets. So you see that there's more face time for these guys, but I agree with you. To be honest, that's one of my favorite parts of covering this game. You know, there are nights where the game itself rises to that gee, this is incredible level. It does do that sometimes. A lot of times it can be dull. There's a lot of minutiae around the game that has to be covered as a reporter. But the human interest stories, the personalities of the game, that's one of my favorite things to portray, to shed a light on in this game. And it's, again, it's nice to see that there are other people out there that want to get into this business and do the same thing.
And it seems like there's a market for it. Now, let me ask you this, too, real quick before we wrap up the show.
I have a lot of friends that don't follow hockey. They're just big into sports. They work in sports and they kind of follow hockey. They follow the local team because it's local and also they know I work there or whatever. But when I ask them just a question about the NHL in general, they will quickly rattle off five players that played hockey in 1999. Was the game marketed that much more aggressively back then? Because almost everybody I work with that is a Arizona Cardinals fan or a Phoenix Suns fan can tell you who Steve Yzerman. It's not just Wayne Gretzky and Mario Lemieux either. It's Steve Yzerman, or I guess Jaromir Jagr was a 10-year vet at that point too. But there's a collection of players from that time that they can tell you about. But most of them probably don't know who John Tavares is. Hmm. It's very strange.
I think that's a story you should explore.
I think I will. All right, that's going to do it for us this week. Thank you so much for listening to episode 58 of the Natural Hat Trick Podcast. For Jamie Eisner, wherever he is, for Craig Morgan, I'm Luke Lipinski. We'll talk to you next week.